Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 120, Adventure-Based Psychotherapy, November 23rd, 2007. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
It's the ability to experience difficult challenges and persevere beyond their self-perceived capabilities, and we feel that that's the greatest preparation for life ahead. And so if we can get them to see and experience and step up to what they perceive as a difficult challenge and work through it, then that's huge.
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Jason Holder. Jason Holder, EDD, is author of the 1999 book, Adventure Lore, Adventure-Based Counseling for Individuals and Groups, and he has over 26 years of child, adolescent, and family counseling experience, most of which has been in an adventure-based environment. He received his doctorate from Boston University, where he is also taught as an adjunct professor. In addition, he has 15 years of experience in teaching grades 1 through graduate school. During the summer, he operates a highly successful outdoor adventure wilderness program for youth. Along with his practice, he regularly presents to schools, businesses, and many other groups. His interactive seminars have a key focus on building self-esteem, self-confidence, effective communication skills, and positive teamwork with elements of fun. His Adventure Lore program is based in Danville, New Hampshire. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Jason Holder, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you, David. It is nice to be shrink-wrapped on a rainy day like this here in New England.
Oh, really? You're there in New Hampshire, and it is rainy.
It is rainy, but, you know, they could use this in Atlanta, Georgia, so we'll be thankful for all we get.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm located in California, the northern part of the state, and it's a foggy morning here, but no rain is predicted for today. It'll probably be in the mid-60s.
Well, this will make the rivers run higher.
Yeah.
And we can use that for our boat, so that's a blessing, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you here. I know that for quite a few years, you've been running an adventure therapy or adventure counseling program there in New Hampshire. And let's see. And I know for a while you also taught at Boston University. Is that still going on?
That is not. No, I consult with a person down at Boston University and just completed my second book with Dr. Eileen Sullivan, who's head of the human movement department down there. So I'm still quite connected.
And what's the title of that book going to be?
That is 50 Best Games and Challenge Activities. And I did the challenge activities. And it starts out with a dialogue. And it says a dialogue between teacher and therapist. And we kind of bring both aspects into the adventure-based or activity-based classroom.
That's great. That's the kind of book I would have eaten up when I was still teaching. I was always looking for, you know, good activities, good icebreakers to use in classes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I have some of those also in my adventure law book on adventure-based counseling. But that's predominantly more technique and how adventure-based counseling works. However, it does have a list of a number of group challenge activities that, you know, bring out the meaning of the direction, so to speak, and brings it into reality.
Okay, well, let's get into that, talking about adventure-based counseling Or is it fair to call it adventure counseling, adventure therapy, or is therapy?
I think all of them apply. I don't know that one is more appropriate than the other. I think it depends upon the user. It's ABC, adventure-based counseling, or ABC, activity-based counseling, or adventure therapy. It comes with all of them. Though most adventure-based counseling or adventure therapy has been in the past, has been involved with the group challenge activity type. And where this book is both, it's written predominantly about adventure-based counseling for individuals, and it also encompasses group as well.
Well, that's interesting. And how long have you been doing this work?
A little over 25 years.
Yeah, boy, that's a good run. So
yeah, it is. And it's been a joy. I mean, there's a reason why I've been doing it for 25 years, and that's because, you know, number one, it's very effective, but number two, you know, it's a passion that I have. And I think whenever we're involved, whatever we're involved with, if we're passionate about it, we're going to be more effective with it, and certainly it's going to keep our flame burning longer, and we tend to be more effective with it.
Yes, indeed. So let me have you begin by describing what adventure therapy is.
Okay, well, adventure counseling or adventure therapy, it really takes the client out of the four walls of the counseling office to speak. We worked with the kids in an adventure base where they take on a variety of different challenges. But the first thing that we do, and I should start with that, with a typical client, let me preface this first of all, David, by saying that not all the kids that we see, or not all the young adults, or even adults that we work with, are in the adventure-based program. We do use traditional forms of counseling, and we're pretty much eclectic based. But probably at least 70% of the kids that we work with, children, adolescents, are strongly involved in the adventure-based program. And with that, we'll typically meet a child right here in the office, and in a very short period of time, we'll be out and about, and we will take them for a walk around the area and just start a dialogue, and we'll look for some spark that's going to hit them, you know, because a lot of kids, what we see, have been very resistant to therapy in the past. There are some kids, the first session will start out in the car, because the kid won't get out of the car because he's been to counseling before and it was, you know, very painful. You have the typical child who struggles in school environment, and then he comes to an office and he has to sit in an office. Well, you know, as therapists, you know, certainly we've been trained to, you know, do more clinical work within the office. And what we try to do is go to the child's comfort zone. So we work, in some cases, we have to work to get the kid out of the car. Most cases, the kids come pretty willingly, and we'll take them around, and we'll find something, again, that really sparks them. We'll oftentimes take them down to the ropes course, and we have about a 20-element ropes course with a four-sided climbing wall and zip lines and all, that's, you know, very intriguing to a lot of kids, and they may start right out with that, and they may want to climb a little bit, and we want them to, and we tell them, you know, even if they have a fear of heights, what a great chance to overcome that fear. And it's not that they have to go all the way up to the climbing wall. If they think they can go 6 feet off the ground and we can get them to go, or they can get themselves to go 7 or 8 feet off the ground, well, that's a lot of success. And that allows them to see that they are more capable than what they anticipated they were. And it also allows us to start to build a bond with them right off, because we've helped them establish something. We believed in them. And also we're holding the rope so that they trust us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very effective, very quick, and very powerful way of being able to reach that. As my buddy Dwight Webb would say, adventure-based counseling takes the best of what is known in the psychology of human behavior and makes the principles come alive. And he goes on to say that trust does not remain just a word with an abstract definition. It becomes an experience with personal meaning grounded in tested reality. And the way, you know, and that is so much the case. I mean, as we tell them, you know, it's the ability to experience difficult challenges and persevere beyond their self-perceived capabilities. And we feel that that's the greatest preparation for life ahead. And so if we can get them to see and experience and step up to what they perceive as a difficult challenge and work through it, then that's huge. And it's something that they've actually done. You know, they've accomplished. And they work through the fear. And how often these kids, or if their anxiety, do they deal with that in a social sense? If they're learning disabilities, attention deficit disorder, you know, they learn it in a scholastic, academic sense in that environment. The depression, overcoming that, difficult family situations. And again, all of those, you know, being very difficult circumstances and finding a way to work their way through it. Now, we do the same thing, but it's a physical thing. However, you know, we use as a metaphor, but it's a physiological. I mean, it's an action-based metaphor, and where they actually can see themselves working through that and accomplishing, you know, something that, again, they might have perceived as too difficult for them.
Yeah, and it's not so much based on talk, but you're really getting them out there.
It's action, right. It is very action-based. And a lot of times we're not so involved in the talk therapy right off initially unless a child or adolescent lends themselves to that. So our first session or a couple of sessions, we may not get into that at all. Yet again, there are some times within 15 to 20 minutes we're into it. And that's really dependent, upon the individual. Now let's say a child doesn't want to get involved in the ropes course. That might be, then we care, we walk along and there's some low ropes elements, you know, that are just, you know, a foot and a half off the ground. And we'll kind of hop up on that, and we'll play around and balance on it a little bit. And that usually attracts kids to do that. And some of them, we have one in particular called the Mohawk Walk, is where we have to work together to get to a certain area,
mm-hmm.
To have a certain level of success. And again, you know, what a way to start to develop that trust and that therapeutic relationship. Very quick and very powerful. Then, you know, if all else fails, and we've taken them, you know, we might go by the bike barn or by where we shoot hoop for some. And I've had kids, I've had at least three kids over the years who would come in here into the office almost mute. And I would go out with these three in particular kids at different years, different times, and shoot, you know, play 15, 20 minutes of basketball. And they'd come in and they would just be, there'd be motor mouths. You know, they'd just, you know, really be able to let it go. And those are all kids with anxiety that were just, you know, so emotionally constipated, you know, with the anxiety, they weren't able to vent, to let it out.
Yeah.
So got it.
Yeah. Now, is what you're describing, I know some years ago I was on your property, which is on a lake in Danville, New Hampshire. Is that the environment that you're describing? Is that where it is?
This is the environment, yes. And I was going to say, we go on down, because some kids will hop in a kayak, and we'll start them paddling across the lake, paddling around and help them, you know, learn how to do that. And it's one that lends itself to success to most kids, to most people. And for them to be in that environment, that's very effective. For some, they'll go out and they may want to go fishing, and we'll go out there. What a great avenue, a non-threatening environment to be out there, you know, fishing with a kid and being able to talk about issues and being able to talk about life. And there's one thing that always catches even the most difficult child. We have a rope swing that goes out over the water, and you can swing out and drop in the water, or you can swing around and go over the water and come back to shore. And if all else fails, we kind of just get on that, and we kind of swing around that, and the kid sees that, and he says, you know, you can see their eyes light up, and of course they want to do it as well. And you just have to find that one little thing. You find that one little, you know, opening to the door, so to speak, and then you can work on from there. You've got something to build on. And that's what we look for, is something to you know, open that door to the relationship and then build on from that.
I remember swinging on that rope swing myself, and I think I got healed.
Well, you know, that's a very therapeutic rope. You know, it's a whole different mindset as to being at the end of your rope, right, Dave?
Yeah, and you actually get paid for this.
Yes, sometimes. Yeah, well, you know, again, it's passionate, but in all honesty, you know, I love my work. I love working with the kids. But, you know, there are some chilly, cold, damp days like today in where, you know, after three or four sessions outside, you kind of look forward to being there, having a little bit more quiet in session inside. But, you know, you have to go wherever the child is going to lead you, whatever's therapeutically most beneficial for that kid. So we do have some very warm winterized jackets here that allow us to take on any environment. But you do have to be really, you know, sensitive to what is going to, you know, work best for that child. And after years of doing it, you know, you develop that intuition. And, you know, what I require in my staff, one of the most important things is, you know, a good level of sensitivity and intuition, because that allows them to develop that ability of being able to relate exceptionally well with young people, and that is really a key. You know, some of those innate qualities score as high as their academic backgrounds, certainly.
Sure. Well, how long has this approach been around?
You know, Dave, when I wrote the book over a number of years. I don't know if you ever went to Dwight Webb's camp on the Kangamangas Highway, out in the remote woods of New Hampshire in the White Mountains. But it's all forest. It's a cabin in the middle of the woods, way out in the middle of the woods with just woods around it. And that's with my own attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or as I like to call it, attention deficit hyperactivity advantage. I needed that sort of environment to write the book. And as I was writing the book, I did quite a bit of research to try to find out more about individual adventure-based counseling, and there was nothing published out there. So this is indeed the first book ever published on adventure-based counseling on an individual sense. There have been other books that have talked about various aspects on the group environment. So we've been doing it for, like I say, for about 25 years. We've been doing the group for a little longer than that, but the adventure-based just about 25 years, the individual-based about 25 years. But it's very difficult to find others that are doing it. And it is so effective, and it's been very popular. We've done very well with it. You know, we're in a situation where we're trying to get, you know, we like to help other people do it. So, you know, I think one of the difficult things is we started out when insurance wasn't quite so bad, and we've had the insurance for it over these years, and it's pretty expensive. I mean, you have the insurance, you have to have the upkeep to the facilities, you have to have the space to be able to do it. At this level. So, you know, I'm sure that is one reason we don't see more of it. But the other thing is that, you know, and I tell people, and I also state it in the book, is that you don't have to have all that we have here to have some activity-based, you know, therapy. And so I've talked to other therapists, and some other therapists have used some of the activities that we use on a more moderate level. But still, you know, just getting the kids out and around and involved is very helpful. And whether it's, you know, maybe shooting a little hoop with them, or maybe, you know, taking a walk or taking a bike ride with them, maybe getting out in a canoe with them. There are a lot of things that you can do without having the extensive resources that we have here.
Yeah. Now, how would your program differ from something like Outward Bound, which I think a lot of people have heard of, and that's been around for a while?
Right. Outward Bound is a group adventure where they go off into the wilderness for a period of 10 days, 20 days, 20, 25 days. And they do, they might do a sailing thing in the ocean. They might do a backpacking thing. Ours is more, you know, a session, an hour session or a 2 hour session. Or if we're working with a small group, for a few hours or sometimes on the weekend, we'll do groups for a day. Outward Bound is, there's a little less of a therapeutic counseling twist to it, mm-hmm. but it's a very good program, and most of the time the staff are very good in working with these kids. So it also has some very, very positive therapeutic benefits to it. We also run an adventure-based summer program for kids. It's somewhat of an extension of our counseling program, where we go off with kids and for a period of a week to 10 days, and we do such things as kayaking, rock climbing, mountain biking, whitewater rafting, hiking, and all these different types of activities with these groups. We tend to do more activities over a shorter period of time because working a lot with the ADHD is that we like to keep them moving. The whole idea is, and when we present this to the kids, is the key is, number one, we have two rules. We have three rules, really. Number one, they have to be safe. They have to be responsible enough to be safe, and that's what we have to make sure we have, that we can continue to provide. Number two is that they have to respect each other and the environment. And number three is to have fun. And we guarantee them if they can do the first two, the third one's on us, and we'll make sure that they have fun. And so that's how we handle it. We also let them know that, particularly our adolescent groups, that by day three, if they're safe and they're respecting each other and the environment, by day four, they can be running the program. They can say how many miles, for example, if we're on a mountain bike trek, how many miles they want to go on the mountain bikes, where they want to camp. And every day we stop at a place to swim. Every night we stop at a place to swim. You know, we're on a lake or a pond or a river. And these kids, their response to that has been incredible. You know, their ability to get along with one another and to appreciate one another and appreciate the differences in one another. It has been very powerful in a self-esteem sense for these kids, in a self-confidence sense. However, we're different in that we have a 1-to-3 ratio with our kids, and our staff have averaged about 7.5-8 years with us.
Wow.
Over the years. So, you know, I'm very fortunate to have that sort of staffing and that sort of ratio. It tends to be a little bit more expensive on our end, but I think in the final analysis, it's no more expensive for people to be involved in our program.
Now, unless this just sound like pure fun, I assume you have some background in training and counseling?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, you know, that's how we get involved. You know, again, I actually taught for a few years first, and I was doing, within the school, I was doing teaching, I was coaching, and I was doing counseling as well. And then I went back to Boston University and got my doctorate. I came back in the school system for a little bit, but then I decided I really wanted to get into the private sector. We had started out with our summer programming, and we had a number of parents that wanted us to see the kids in counseling throughout the year. And so then I had to make that transition from the school setting to the private sector. And it was difficult for me because I really enjoyed the school setting. But again, to have that independence in the private sector was special.
You mentioned that your staff, and do they have training in counseling? Or?
Yes. Most of my staff have at least a master's in counseling. And and they have a good degree of experience. And some may be MSWs, some may be MED, some may be MS, but most of them have their masters. However, probably one of my most powerful therapists has a bachelor's with many, many years of experience. He's worked in different schools with emotionally handicapped kids, and he's been on with us for a number of years. He really is involved with more of the group and the summer program, but he's just his ability to, his insights and his experiences has just been incredible. And that's the way it is with staff here. You know, we do a lot of sharing as to what's going on with different kids, and so we have that ability to cross-reference a variety of different circumstances as they go on. So to have the staff with the experience that they have is you know, it's a godsend. And it's great for me, particularly in the summer program, because I can go and play, David. You know, you talked about, you know, having the fun with it. I can go and play, you know, on these groups and with the kids. You know, it's always with a therapeutic twist. You know, whether you're doing the individual or whether you're doing the group, it's always in your mind, okay, what do I have to do to make this work best? But by the same token, having fun with them is powerful too. For them to see you that you are truly enjoying it, you're really having fun with them. That's powerful in itself.
Okay, Jason, can you give us any case examples of a kid who came in with some problems, and then how maybe this later translated into their life after they left camp or after they left a certain number of sessions?
You know, it is. You know, that's probably the most rewarding part about it, David, is the amount of feedback that we've gotten. And it just happens over and over and over again. We were actually very surprised by the responses early on, and it was with our summer program. And people would, post program, and every child that's in our summer program, their parents come and pick them up on the last day, and they have one of our staff members sits down and processes the trip with them. And, you know, what we're noticing, the people coming back, well, that's why we sent Johnny again this year, because it had such a profound effect on him last year. And we were amazed. We were truly amazed that kids that we had just for a week had that major effect on those kids and how they performed. Now, I'm sure that's not the case with every kid, but I don't know of a kid that hasn't benefited in one way or another, and it was amazing the number of kids that were so profoundly impacted by that. And we hear it over and over and over again. I was out for a jog yesterday. I had my eventual sweatshirt on, and I was jogging along, and I saw this lady stop me. She said, eventually, she said, I sent my child there, and she says it was one of the best experiences of his life. And how often we hear that. We had a kid this summer that came, and the parent was talking about in the post program discussion, and I happened to have that parent, and she said, you know, the reason we sent our son is because our physician told us about it. And I said, oh great. And she said, yes, he said that he was in the program 18 years ago, and he said it was the thing that changed his life more than any other single thing. And this is coming from a successful physician. I mean, you know, those are things that are pretty powerful.
Wait, was the physician in it or the son?
No, the physician. The physician had been in the summer program.
Interesting.
18 years prior.
Ah, so he had gone on to have some real success in the world.
Yeah, to have some real success. Yeah. And you know, that is true with so many. To understand also that our summer program, you know, in counseling, we're always seeing kids who, you know, carry some sort of diagnosis, you know, or have some, you know, certain level of issues that need to be treated. That's not necessarily the case in our summer program. In our summer program, we have a lot of kids with a variety of issues. They cannot be physically aggressive towards others. And because of our program, they need to have a certain level of physical capability. be limited. I mean, for example, they have to be able to, in this case, walk and chew gum at the same time, or they have to be able to, you know, if the mountain bike trip, we like to have them know how to ride a bike prior to getting here.
Yeah, I would think so.
but we've had some that were just at that level, and again, that was successful for them. So in our summer program, we have some kids that are, you know, honest kids that are, you know, leaders in the class, you know, very good athletes. And we have other kids who might be Asperger's or, you know, well, we have a lot of ADHDers, but again, they're assets to the program. Kids with learning disabilities, kids with depression and anxiety, et cetera. And some of those kids, you would not know, many of those kids had any issues when they get in this environment. Because it's an environment where a lot of them can succeed, and they get in with a group, and all of a sudden they start to have success, and it's amazing to see their growth. So it's
maybe the pathology isn't in the kid, but is in the school. I mean, in the whole setup of what school is.
Well, I think the pathology is probably in the kids, but induced by, you know, many times induced by an inappropriate school placement for that child or school programming for that child. I mean, as we know, that probably the schools are very good for about 60 to 70% of the population. But we have so many kids that learn in a different way, not only academics, but social and emotional behaviors in a different way. And they need a different type of programming, or they need adjustments in their program. Now, sometimes the IEPs or 504s, you know, really, really help with that. But sometimes that's not enough. And they need more than that. And we really have to recognize that, hey, this child is struggling because, you know, all those issues aren't being answered. A lot of times that can be fixed right within the school, and sometimes they need a placement that's more appropriate for them. But you're absolutely right. You know, a school setting can exacerbate, an inappropriate school program can exacerbate an already, you know, difficult circumstance with the child.
Yeah, I was struck by, at one point you said that you see the ADHD's kids are actually an asset in your program.
It's amazing because, again, they're not in an environment that is threatening to them. They find acceptance. They find success. And these kids tend to have a greater level of, many of them have a greater level of sensitivity. Some of them are very intuitive because of that.
Interesting.
They tend to be bright. They tend to have more energy. They tend to be more creative. So if we look at that and we can tweak that in the right direction, then these kids can be very successful. And that's why I call it ADHA, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Advantage, because there are definitely advantages in having that. And probably another bias is because I'm ADHD. Myself, and so I gotta play it right. But also having a learning disability myself in the eighth grade, I was tested. I was reading at a fourth grade level.
Interesting.
And so you know, I had a struggle, and I looked back at having the ADHD and the learning disabilities, and I looked back at that as being an advantage for me.
And somehow you got onto this thing that's just right for you.
It is just right for me because it works within my strengths, and
yeah.
I've had to tweak some things. You know, I married a woman who's very organized, and I have a secretary who's very organized, and so that, you know, that certainly helps me. I have staff that have certain organizational strengths. But again, you know, it is finding how it works for you, building those strengths, and being able to, you know, surround yourself in the right environment that's going to work for you. But for me, you know, I struggled through school. I had a session just a week ago with a group of learning disability students. I work for I do a venture program on a regular basis for a learning disability school, and I often talk about how those kids have an advantage. They have had to learn to persevere at an early age. They have had to learn to face adversity at an early age and be able to work through that. And that's developing that sense of perseverance. Sure, they'll struggle now, but if they handle it the right way, they can be stronger for it in the future. Mm-hmm. If they have the right assistance, if they have the right support. And part of that needs to come from the parents. So, and I must mention that another part of our program includes us working with the parents and with the schools. And we do that on a regular basis. It's important for us to have those contacts, because otherwise those are domains of those child's lives that are untouched. And if that's the case, you know, sure, they can be here for an hour a week, an hour every 2 weeks, or 2 hours a week, but then the rest of the world is back in chaos again, in frustration. And when that's the case, that certainly makes it difficult. So we like to try to positively impact on all aspects of their lives.
Yeah, I think early on you mentioned that you also sometimes do this work with adults. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, I did just had a group a little while back, and this lady had a swing off. She was up on the ropes course. She had a lot of fears in regards to it, and she had a swing down off from this rope, from this log into It's a very scary thing, the way the swing is set up. And so she finally, after 10-15 minutes of helping her through it, finally swung down off, and she got off, and she was going through a very difficult circumstance in her marriage, and she said the first words were, "Oh my God," she said, "if I can do this, I can do anything. Mm. I can, I can work my other issues out." Mm-hmm. And, that's pretty powerful. And we do a lot of work with schools. I do a lot of work with teachers' programs and some with corporate, and where we work on areas of communication skills, the whole team building aspect, mm-hmm. where they're given different challenges, and without working together, it's going to be very difficult for them to be successful in the challenge. And so we can talk about different things that get in the way and how they get in the way. And I always like to interject some fun in it, because I think, people need to have some levity. They need to have some fun in their lives, parents or professionals as well as kids. So when we do our staff programming, our corporate programming, we do a lot on that aspect of challenge activities and working together and being able to communicate that later on. And it's amazing how other people find strength in each other, whereas before they might have been thinking, "Oh, this person doesn't think like me, it doesn't work like me, so it's not working." But now through these programs they find, "Oh my God, it's a good thing that you have this strength, because I wasn't going to be able to be successful at that, and you really helped me out in it." And so that's appreciation and awareness of other people's strengths.
Well, this sounds, like so much fun. I'm sure somebody listening is probably thinking to themselves, "Boy, I'd like to do work like that." What advice would you have for people who want to enter the field of adventure therapy?
Well, first, become independently wealthy. I would say go for it. Yeah, you can start out light. Like I said, you don't have to get as involved as I am right now. You can't expect to right off. But start out slow and work into it is probably the first thing to do. Don't try to totally immerse yourself, because it takes time. It takes patience. You can't just jump into these activities and think it's going to come out just right. So, again, pace yourself. And don't think that it's about just going out and having fun and playing with kids. And, that is such an important thing that I had one person say to me, one psychologist said, a nice guy, and he's very good. But he said, gosh, he said, I'd love to do that. He says, I love to play tennis, you know. I wonder if I can do it with tennis. And, you can go and play tennis with somebody, and make it therapeutic, but that can't be, you know, your daily routine because it's what you like. You have to find out what works for that person, and you have to work that dialogue, and you have to work the trust issues. It's very... It can be very deep and very very intense, and you really just want to be able to have that experience and note that you're there to make things work for your client, to find out what their needs are, and to be able to open up those avenues of trust, to help them grow in the areas of self-confidence and self-esteem. Because when that happens, then they become more open to further therapy, and then you can become more invasive. When they're ready for that, particularly for kids are so closed, oftentimes closed to that adolescence. And some adults are, and put up a little bit better front than the kids do.
Yeah.
So to be able to work through that is key. So I would say probably give me a call.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Give me a call.
Do you take...
You know, get the book, and
and
I'd be happy to help anybody talk them through it and help them with that.
Do you take interns at all?
We do. It's really hard. I do on the group. It's a little bit harder for individual because of, you know, the way we're working with the kids. Certainly not when I'm starting out with a child because it's so personal, the start of that, the whole trust aspect. But we have worked with interns. And once we get going, particularly like, as I said, with the group, and we'll start them out with the group, and then we'll work in some individual with them.
So it sounds like if somebody wanted to break into this, the first thing would be that they should get some training and credentials in counseling or therapy. And then if they're an outdoorsy type person who's drawn to adventure and so on, maybe then they could consult with you about ways to integrate that into their work.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would be good for them to appreciate the outdoors themselves, because if they don't, then it's harder for them to develop a passion in it.
Yeah.
And if you have a passion in the outdoors, you need to have the equal passion in working with people at whatever level you're going to be working with them. Then you bring the two together, and then you strike a harmony.
Yes. Well, Dr. Jason Holder, thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you, Dave. I've appreciated it, and it's certainly nice talking to you. And I hope you can send me some of that 60-degree weather that you're having out there.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Jason Holder. You might recall my earlier interview with my great New Hampshire friend, Dwight Webb. That was number 68, and it was on the soul of counseling way back about 10 months ago. Periodically, I go back to visit my friend Dwight in New Hampshire. I'm way overdue at this point, but Dwight will be coming through this way in December, and I'm looking forward to seeing him then. Well, Dwight used to live on a beautiful lake in Danville, New Hampshire, and Jason was one of his neighbors on the lake, and I got to meet him on a couple of my visits back there some years ago. So that's how I came to know about the wonderful rope swing. I clearly remember swinging out over the lake and letting go to land in the lake with a big splash. In fact, time goes by so fast now, I'm remembering that I had Christopher, one of my twin sons, with me on that trip. And I think he would have been around 10 or 11. And now he's a married man of 26 already. I remember he fell in love with a wonderful golden retriever that Dwight and his wife Leslie had. And now my son Christopher not only has a wife of his own and a golden retriever of his own, but lives in a similarly woodsy situation. But I digress. Back to Jason in New Hampshire. He and his family live on a wonderfully wooded property right on this gorgeous lake. You heard him talking about kayaks and canoes and mountain bikes and such. And he has all of this stuff right there. And he also has a whole ropes course set up on his property as well. What a wonderful life he's created for himself. I spend most of my days indoors in front of a computer or a microphone, and here's this guy living and working out in nature's paradise all these years, not only making a living, but doing the good work of bringing hope and encouragement and support to kids and adults who need it. I've had the good fortune to have a taste of that life. During graduate school, I was a counselor and later a counselor supervisor at a couple of outdoor camps, one for emotionally disturbed boys. These were wonderful, informative experiences for me. Later, when I was a professor here in California, I had some opportunities to be involved in some wilderness activities. Two summers, through the Esalen Institute, I co-led five-day raft trips down the Rogue River in Oregon. My part of the job was to lead yoga and dream work. Doing this sort of work on the river was magical. We insisted people not wear watches, and so I lost track of time myself, and I remember on one trip crying when I realized that the next day would be our last. Again, through Esalen, another summer, I had the opportunity to co-lead a week-long High Sierra backpacking trip that included a psychodrama workshop as part of it. These stand out as mountaintop experiences in my life, pun intended. And once again, my hat is off to Jason Holder, who's managed to create noble work, inner work, in the great outdoors of New England.
Let us all come together to see what we can find. Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Let us all remember what you seek is what you find. And Dr. Dave is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Exploring my spirit and our psyche, we are learning to unwind. And Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. We're all in your mind. We're all in your mind.
As I record this segment, it's Thanksgiving here in the U.S. Family will be arriving soon, and I have much to be thankful for. And a big thing is the joy I get from the whole process of creating Shrink Wrap Radio and the support I get from you listeners. There were a few days when you could have ordered a Shrink Wrap Radio t-shirt from our website. With the help of listener and podcaster Michael Nissler of bridgehands.com, we were able to open an online store at Cafe Press and upload a shirt design that included the Shrink Wrap Radio logo with the four-panel Andy Warhol-style colorization of the image of Sigmund Freud. Michael and I both managed to get our orders in for a t-shirt, and I plan to announce their availability here, but Cafe Press has put the t-shirt in quarantine because the image of a famous person is involved, and they don't want to risk running afoul of copyright issues. So I'll either come up with a new logo or do the t-shirts with text and no logo. I'll keep you posted as I move forward with this. Now, you might recall that last time I offered to send books that I've reviewed out to any listeners who posted a positive and genuine review on iTunes. And I've sent out 4 books so far, and I've still got some more that I could send out. So if you do put a positive review up on iTunes, send me a copy of it along with your postal address and I'll send you a book. And let me remind you that most of the episodes from our first year are not in the feed, but they are as timely as ever and you can find them in our archives at shrinkwrapradio.com. And while you're on the Shrink Wrap Radio site, you can vote in our poll in which I ask if you'd be interested in my periodically conducting a live call-in show. Speaking of the Shrink Wrap Radio website, I could really use some volunteer help adding some features. I need to add more pages, but I've run out of menu space at the top. So I'd like to add some drop-down menus to the top menu bar, but I don't have the skill to do that. I'd also like to have a page that would automatically list all the shrink wrap episode titles with a link to each one. If you know WordPress and how to do these things and would be willing to help, please let me know. I also dropped in to lurk at the Shrink Wrap Radio Fan Club again. It's on Facebook and there's a link to it in the green gutter area on the right-hand side of the Shrink Wrap Radio website. I took a peek there just now and I see 32 people have joined the fan club and many have made comments and some have posted their pictures too. The fan club was created by listener Susie and it's a great place for you to dialogue with other listeners and I hope it will become a sort of community watering hole for the Shrink Wrap Radio community. Susie has suggested it might be a good place for those of you who are interested in dreams to share dreams and the "if this were my dream" type interpretation. There's an interview up on my other podcast series, Wise Counsel, and I've heard from a couple of listeners that they found that interview personally relevant. It's with Dr. Amy Baker, who has written a book on what she calls parental alienation syndrome. According to Dr. Baker, parental alienation occurs when one parent manipulates children into believing that the other parent has rejected them and is otherwise no good and should be themselves rejected. You know, situation often during a divorce where one parent really is trying to drive a wedge between the children and the other parent, and you might have been involved in such a divorce yourself, or you might have been involved in that sort of triangle as a child. Now, you'll find that interview along with a free written transcript at www.wisecounselpodcast.com. It's been a long time since we've had any new additions to our Frapper map. Perhaps you're a new listener and haven't put yourself on our map. You'll find a link to it at shrinkwrapradio.com. As always, I'm proud to be part of the Pod Show lineup of podcasts, and they've also brought us GoDaddy as a sponsor. You can subscribe to this show and other podcasts at podshow.com. And remember to use the code SHRINK3 at checkout from GoDaddy to get a discount on your next domain name or web hosting purchase at GoDaddy, as I know many of you have already.
Hi, this is Fernando Blanco from Mexico City. You're on the couch, on a rock, on a boat, on a plane, with Dr. Dave.
Thanks for that transition, Fernando. I hope you're still listening down there in Mexico City. Now let's see what's in our mailbag. First, we hear from Elsja. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Elsja writes, "Hi, let me start by saying that I very much enjoy your podcast. I'm always eager to see a new show come up, as I'm certain I'll learn something new. The tone of the show is so relaxed and congenial most of the time. I often turn off the MP3 player feeling like I've met someone interesting and fun to talk to, and eager to look further into something that they said. I'm very interested in hearing more about some of the alternative treatments for PTSD, specifically EMDR, NLP, and EFT. I would love, love, love it if you found someone knowledgeable about these topics and asked them the hard questions. Does it really work? And if it's that easy, why isn't everyone doing it? I know you've covered EFT before, but it was more from a business performance point of view." Yes, I did cover EFT with Dawson Church in number 72 on soul medicine. So if you didn't hear that one, you might want to check into that. I've also dealt with NLP in a couple of shows. I wasn't real tough on my guests, but I do have some questions about NLP for myself. I'm not sure how much research literature there is supporting its effectiveness. Hey, that's just me. I know there are people out there who swear by it. And EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, I've recently done an interview with the founder of that approach. I started out pretty skeptical, but now I think I'm a believer. And also, my last interview with Tony Madrid touches on that, so you probably heard that one. I asked Elsja in a follow-up email about her name, and she wrote back. She said, "My name, Elsja, is Dutch, which is kind of funny because I'm not Dutch, and neither is my family. My dad spent some time in Holland when he was a teenager. Elsja was the name of a girl he knew there. I figure she must have made a really big impression. EFT stands for Emotional Freedom Technique. This is an offshoot of TFT, Thought Field Therapy. There's a ton of anecdotal evidence on the internet, which leads to doubt in and of itself," she comments, "but no research, and it was designed by an insurance salesman, which makes me suspicious, as well it might. On the other hand, just because there's no empirical evidence is not enough reason to assume something doesn't work. I'm a speech-language pathologist, and I know that many of the techniques used widely in my profession have no research support whatsoever, and yet we all know that they're effective and use them widely. Thanks for your time, Elsja." So thanks for all of that, Elsja, and keep listening. Longtime listener Michael in Illinois writes, and he's referring to, a specific interview, and right now I'm not sure which one, so I'll skip down to where he says, "The intrigue in your story about the greased pig contest is that your feeling that you needed to participate in and your vision that you would win this event can only be described as clairvoyant. Your description of the event probably had little correlation of your expectations of how accidentally the event unfolded." Now, Michael, I guess, is way behind in terms of listening to these shrink wrap radio episodes, and he's referring to the one in which I told my grease pig story, and I haven't looked up the number of that one, but it is one of my favorite stories. And it's a good point that you make, Michael, that perhaps that was a precognitive impression that I was getting, that I was going to win, because I was so sure that I was going to win that I went around and I bragged to everybody that I was going to win. And I almost didn't. So maybe there was a precognitive element to that that I didn't fully realize at the time. And Michael goes on to write, "Along those lines, in the mid-80s, I went to see a movie, Turtle Diary, about a lonely man and woman who meet at an aquarium and then conspire to release the captive turtles into the sea. Before going to the movie, I had only read a short description which said no more than I just stated, but I had a vision or feeling that the movie was really about how the two individuals come out of their shells in the process. I remember leaving the theater at the time of the movie with a sense of eerie awe of how accurately the movie matched what I had imagined." That's an interesting experience. And then he says, "I recently went to see the movie Into the Wild. I do not often go to the movies, but had some premonition that this one would be important for me to see. I procrastinated, but went to see the movie the last day it played locally, and my premonitions were well confirmed." But Michael, you don't go on to say why they were confirmed. What is it that that movie touched for you, or what kind of precognition was borne out by it? I went to see the movie Into the Wild and enjoyed it greatly myself. Let me read part of an email from another Michael. This is the Michael in Petaluma who helped me figure out Cafe Press, and I referred to him earlier. And as part of a longer email, he wrote, "You're right on avoiding the advice show format for a call-in talk show. As you know, I'm considering doing periodically having a call-in show, asking you to vote on what you think of that idea." So that's what Michael is commenting on when he says, "You're right on avoiding the advice show format for a call-in talk show. Yes, Saturday sounds good, although it's a fair amount of work, so hopefully in time others will call in. I recommend that if when you you don't get strong demand..." That sentence didn't get finished. So that happens in email sometime. I'm not quite sure where you were going with that, Michael. He goes on to say, "As far as the notion of quirky New Age guests, we had somebody who wrote in and it kind of objected to some of my further out guests. And so Michael says, as far as the notion of quirky New Age guests, I'm with you. They have a place and can be interesting, even if we don't buy in to all the principles and concepts that seem far afield. I agree with your approach to give the alternate idea folks a moment on the soapbox to share their hearing with exposure to us via your podcast. Yes, we ought to have a critical evaluation skills, and most of us can always fast forward when necessary. My only advice and counsel would be to limit the time allotted to guests with radical ideas that far away from the mainstream. Did I say that? And here I try to expose my mantra, and here I try to espouse my mantra is that I'm not a nonconformist, but proudly a self-conformist. Jeesh, I thought I'd be the last to be accused of groupthink. Perhaps this is the years catching up with me after all. Okay, Dave, after learning about your upgraded microphones as pod brother to pod brother, I must caution you to avoid the dark side of the force. I fear I could easily seduce you into lusting for some awesome audio quality. But after listening to podcast number 118, The Psychology of Materialism, I fear I'd be a co-conspirator indulging you in a life of conspicuous consumption. But for me, I'm afraid there's no hope. No hope, boys and their toys. Happy trails to you until we meet again. And in fact, I did go down to Petaluma and meet with Michael and talk about boys and their toys. He's a videographer, and he has got the coolest video toys you can imagine. Has gone way beyond me in turn on the spending category. Next, we hear from Kevin, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I haven't written for a while, but I'm still loving the show and thought I would give you some feedback. First up, the new mic with the valve preamp is great, and the Skype interviews are now very high quality." Thank you, Kevin. I'm feeling that way, too. He says, "Overall, your production values are really professional, and I don't think you need to up the bitrate. The lapel mics are the weakest link, however. They would probably be fine if you stayed out of the wind and food courts, though far be it from me to stand between you and the chance to acquire another couple of cool gadgets. Yes, well, I've gone on to some head mics, and I think they're going to give me a much better result. I'm just dying to use them on someone, but I don't have anybody in my local environment right now that I'm ready to interview." He goes on to say, "I have enjoyed all your recent shows, including, to my surprise, the More Human Interest programs when you interviewed Anna, attended the expo, and visited the psychology club. I'm glad you seem to be able to resist the advice from Bruce, your correspondent on show number 118, to stick to mainstream science, and that you are even willing to risk incurring the opprobrium of his influential brother in your ongoing quest to bring us interesting, stimulating guests. I have a hard science background, but my interest in dreams, which first led me to your show, has taught me that there is more going on in the world than mainstream science is keen to look at. Perhaps your experience is similar." Yes, it is. "On that note, I wanted to let you know that I would enjoy hearing a show on past lives. Surprisingly, there's some good science on this. You know, I've been hearing that from other quarters, and it is something that I probably need to look into." He goes on to say, Professor Ian Stevenson. Yes, and this is the guy I've been hearing about. I know Charles Tart in particular recommended that I interview him, as I recall, and so did Stanley Krippner. Professor Ian Stevenson of the Department of Personality Studies at the University of Virginia compiled a very compelling body of data working with spontaneous past life memories of children. And he refers me to a Wikipedia entry. So if you look up Ian Stevenson on Wikipedia, you'll find that. And then he goes on to say, "Dr. Jim Tucker continues his work at the same institution and would probably be up for an interview, as inevitably he has a new book out." And you can find that at lifebeforelife.com. And while we're touring the fringes, how about something on energy psychology? Well, I just spoke about that, and I think I have done a show or two on that. He says, "I saw a friend of mine relieved of a rather debilitating spider phobia with just 5 minutes of EFT. That's EFT, by the way, stands for Emotional Freedom Technique, and one of the previous letter writers referred to it. But I'm not at all sure quite what happened. I would be particularly interested to hear an interview with one of your colleagues from the psychological establishment who has incorporated energy psychology into their practice. Well, you should listen to the two interviews that I did on Tai Chi and Qigong with my friend Michael. Oh my God, I'm blocking on his last name. But do the search on Shrink Wrap Radio for Tai Chi and the two shows with my good friend Michael, whose last name I'm blocking on. I'm sorry, Michael. They both touch on that, as well as the interview with Dawson Church. He goes on to say the World Trade Center conspiracy theory mentioned in your email section on show number 117 is, however, more than a step too far for me. By the way, the Maori greeting on that show is pronounced Kia ora tato. Well, I'm sure I had more to say when I started this, but I don't type very fast, so my thoughts of the evening have slipped by as I've been writing, and the rest of my thoughts seem to have slipped away also. Keep up the good work, Kevin. And he says, I'm really looking forward to the hypnosis EMDR interview. And since I ran that last week, and it's taken me a while to get to your email, hopefully you got to hear it and were fully satisfied. Finally, one more. We hear from Paul in Ottawa, Canada, who writes, Dear Dr. Dave, I enjoyed listening to your show with your guests talking about the psychology of materialism. As much as I agree with him that we can do less and that there are viable alternatives to our current consumptive lifestyles, I was skeptical about your guests' ideological tone, making me uncertain as to how flexible he is in allowing for non-necessities as part of an individual's life. For example, art requires, in theory and practice, much of these sorts of things, from paintbrushes to a DJ's expensive turntables and equipment, all of which falls into the realm of creative activities, which your conversation with your guest unfortunately failed to really get into. You make a good point there. And I think in the back of my mind, there was a part of me that maybe wanted to press him a little bit on that. Maybe I could have asked him, well, what kinds of lifestyle changes have you made and not made? Because when, you know, the rubber meets the road, most of us are not willing to move into the wilderness and, you know, just live off the land as the guy in Into the Wild wanted to do. And it's very hard to, quote, do no evil. Because as you look along the chain of consequences, it seems like just about everything has some potential downside, potential evil consequences. But at the same time, hopefully we're all striving to make good choices and to minimize those. And we each will find a different balance place in our own lives. But I believe it's really important for us to become more and more aware of consequences. And as we do so, that will shape our choices. And I suspect that my guess was not as extreme as he might have sounded. For example, I know that he was about to leave on a 2-week trip to London. Well, when you fly to London, you use a lot of jet fuel. Now, presumably he was going for a good reason. He was probably going to speak at a conference and so on. But there are always these trade-offs. Okay, getting back to Paul's letter, he writes, we are not indeed creatures merely of necessity, which also underlies being human, and so I would have appreciated more discussion in the episode in question about the non-necessities that enrich the life and well-being of individuals, but are not symptomatic of a crass materialistic lifestyle. That's really well said, Paul, and I wish I had done that. Finally, he says, on a positive note, thank you for being honest about your desire for technologies related to podcasting. I sympathize and think this is just an example of the artistic non-necessities I have in mind. Sincerely, Paul. Okay, I think that better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to me to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. And remember that you can leave voicemail comments. Just click on the logo or on the badge on the website that says My Chingo, and you can leave a voicemail there, or you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to Dr. Jason Holder for inspiring us to consider adventure-based therapy. On the next episode, my guest will be Dr. Lawrence Miller, who was my guest way back on show number 40 about practical police psychology. Well, this time we'll be discussing his latest book, which is all about tips for dealing with psychopathology in the workplace. You won't want to miss it. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.